This is Adam Gorney Rivals here with West Charlotte High School football coach Sam Greiner. So much to talk about here. So let's talk football first.
Yeah,
let's,
a lot
let's
of
get
stuff.
The boring stuff out of the way.
No, definitely not boring, but good stuff.
Kovaris Crouch is high school coach.
Yes.
And he was a guy that wanted to play running back, wanted to play linebacker, who knows what he wanted to do. Mm-hmm. Where did you kind of see him fit best? And kind of walk me through his progression to now being in the Big Ten and kind of producing, you know?
Yeah, he's definitely producing where he's at. I mean, he's with a great head football coach at Michigan State, and that guy does a phenomenal job. You know, Thomas Davis and I were just talking about Mel Tucker and how well he's going to help Kovaris. Kovaris is one of those guys, once he's in that program longer, he's going to develop and develop better and better as we go. If he would have came out and played running back, I think that Clemson probably would have been the spot, or Michigan would have probably been the spot. It's unfortunate what happened at Tennessee. I thought that was a great opportunity for him. And you could see it as you got towards the latter part of the games. He was performing really, really well. And then in the bowl game, Texas A&M, did some great things. And then once all the people you trust and, you know, love are gone, then you got to make good decisions. And I think he made the perfect decision going to Michigan State. On hindsight, would he ever go back and say, man, I wish I would have played running back and stuff? Definitely those things cross your mind. I just think that once he figures out this linebacker, remember, he hasn't played it at all necessarily until he got to college.
Yeah.
Well, I think he's going to have a longer career in the future because he's very fast. He's got to keep working on his flexibility and things like that. But he's going to attach really well to combines and things in the future. He'll do really well.
He was a kid that ninth grade, I mean, he looked like he jacked up and big and strong and stuff. How do you take that and kind of craft it into being a football player?
Well, the funny thing is, he comes in. So I'm at Harding, and you know, the first year I'm there, he walks in the building. We're doing workouts in the summer. And I was like, hey, where are you transferring in from? And he was like, I'm a freshman. I was like, yeah, right. Like, I thought he was joking around with me. I mean, he was a monster. He was about 200 pounds and had a muscular frame. And then we did a 225 or a 185 and 225. He went to 225 on the bench press and did it like 7 reps as a freshman, never even knowing how to work out. But that wasn't his better attributes. His best attributes is not knowing that he was young. He was a leader from day one. He knew that this is something he wanted to do, and he put work in. And a lot of kids get caught up in a lot of different things. They could get caught up in, you know, trying to be popular and doing these things or going out with these girls. This guy worked on his craft all the time, and that's what made him so good.
Yeah. Is that just innate? Is that just born in you? Can you teach that, or is that just something you have?
Some things you cannot teach. The one things you can teach is work ethic, and I think that his family's taught him that, and everything else translates to it. You know, like my son Brahim Murphy, 100-pound guy, never played a quarterback a day in his life, but he was the greatest leader I've ever been a part of, and that's what helped us win the state championship, having his leadership abilities. So I think there's some things that are born, but you are able to grow with some of the things you're born with to grow into other things that help out at football.
Talk about Brahim's story and now at Panhard.
Yes, definitely. I mean, it's kind of unique because you have a kid that, you know, didn't play for me the first year I was there. He was ineligible, found out more about the situation, and he was in my weightlifting class and came in there from time to time late, always apologetic. And after school, we would do workouts again. He would be there and work really hard. And I would always take him to work or different places whenever we would go there. And I found out his situation was unique. I never took him to the same place twice. And then about 2 months into it, our relationship grew so much that he opened up and talked to me a little bit more about it. And he says, you know, I stay with my older sister from place to place. She works, and you know, it's tough on her. I said, so you don't have really a stable. I said, so I talked to his sister, actually, a lot of people don't know this, and said, hey, I want Brahim to just stay with me, you know, during high school now, because I don't want him to have to worry about where he's staying from night to night, and it'll take a burden off of you, because she felt like she had to be the mother of Brahim, and she's just the older sister. Well, wife asked him to come into our house, and long story short, he's never left since then, and great things came from him. You know, 100-pound kid. Everybody tries to equate it to the Blind Side story.
Yeah,
it's not the Blind Side. If he was 6'8", I'd take that kid in my house all day. Like, hey, come on,
it's four Brahims.
Yeah, exactly. But nah, the greatest leader I've ever been a part of came in, led our team, never played a down a quarterback, and led our team to our first playoff appearance in a long, long time. And then the following year, the magical year happened where we won a state championship with those guys. Kovaris was a junior, but Brahim was the leader of that team. And it was funny, you have a kid that's 100 45 pounds at the time then, and you got big Kavars Crouch in the huddle, and they're all looking at Brahim for leadership. And that's why he ended up going to Army, because as soon as he was done with his junior year, they reached out and said, hey, we're going to give him an appointment. He needs to hit these marks to get into school. And that just shows you how great an academy is. They looked at his GPA from when he had a stable home and not his first year at school.
Yeah, in totality.
And
yeah.
Then he had to hit a mark on the SAT, and he did that. And they welcomed there with open arms. And towards the end of his career, a lot of schools like the Appalachians and stuff like that, which are great schools. But me being, you know, his father figure at the time, I didn't let them talk to him because I didn't want him to fill his head. I knew that him going to where he's going, he'll be great. It ain't going to be easy, but we're going to play a chess move. It's going to be a 40-year decision, not a 4-year decision. And I'm just so proud of him staying with that, because we have not seen the greatness of Brahim yet. We're going to see that 10, 15 years from now, where he's, you know, running a company or doing whatever the things that he can do. His leadership ability is just unbelievable.
The leadership at Army, obviously, is going to be perfect fit, because that's what you're saying. But just being at West Point, having that degree, having that sense, I mean, how proud are you of all that?
I'm beyond proud. Like, yeah. Like I said, he's my role model. You know, he looks at me as his coach, and he actually looks at my wife as his mom, because his mom passed away when he was 5, and my wife loves him to death. And I'm not looking for him to look at me as a dad. I like him calling me coach, but I love him like a son. He is, if someone asks me, he's my son. Yeah. I love him, and I'll take my shirt off and do anything I can for him if he ever in need. I think those years, he really, really loves me and knows that I appreciate what he's done. I'm very proud of him. And I'm hoping that I'll be one of the best looking younger grandpas one day, because he is an older guy. When he gets married and he's dating a girl that runs track at Miami, I'm like, I know. I ain't got too many good years left.
It would be fun.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the fun stuff.
Yeah.
For people that don't know, you were on the Amazing Race.
Oh, yeah. Amazing Race. So, you know, CBS reached out to us, and it was a great opportunity. They were like, you know, can Brahim or, you know, and I said, Brahim ain't going to do it. He's in season in Army, and maybe we'll get to go back with him. That'll be kind of cool. But my wife stepped up to the plate, and seeing her train for, you know, a few months, knowing that we're going to be on this race, was pretty amazing to see. And we got on the show, and we were probably one of the top 3 or 4 teams on it. And it was the first time ever, the Amazing Race. Normally you're gone for 30 to 40 days, and you don't get to talk to your family. A lot of people don't know this about the show, but they take your cell phones, they take your information, where you have no contact to outside sources. Like, you'll go into a hotel room, there's no phone. They'll have it disconnected. Any internet, they'll take it away. You can't get on social media.
Sounds
like
a nightmare.
It is. Now, we do a little bit of guerrilla warfare to the other teams that we were on, a little behind-the-scenes information, because this is my wife. My wife's with me in my room. They might have a best friend with them, and they're staying in a room with them for 24 hours, and that'll get frustrating. So we would do certain things for a little bit of guerrilla warfare, because we're used to staying in the same room together. So it was kind of funny how we would pick on the other teams. I know you guys are struggling in there, you know, You ain't talked to your wife, you ain't talked to your girlfriend. And it was some good stuff. But we ended up making it to Scotland, and then, you know, Phil and the rest of the team of CBS and Amazing Race came in and approached us and said, hey, you know, this virus is come on strong, and we're going to have to shut and postpone the season down right now.
This was March 2020. Yeah. Right when it was going.
Yeah. So we were out there in February, and then right when March happens, we were in a second, the third leg, probably about to go to the Arctic Circle, something really crazy. They haven't been there very often on that race, and I'm excited. I like cold and beautiful places, but you don't have really time to enjoy these places.
Right,
people think you just get to go sightsee.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you are racing, and it's very competitive, and they might not show exactly how hard things are. It is very difficult. Like, I've never played an instrument in my entire life. I literally had to go to a roadblock, and a roadblock is something where you read a clue, and me and you are reading this clue, and we have to make a decision
who does it before
you see it. They'll give you a little bit of clue,
yeah,
and you can only do so many, and I can only do so many. So if I've done like 7, if you've done 3, you might have to do the last 3. So you got to be strategic how you do that. Well, it says who's got it in the bag or something like that. I'm like, oh, I got this in the bag. I gotta put bagpipes together and play the bagpipes. And I was able to get through it. We finished 4th in this race. And it's a lot of things like that. It's kind of cool and unique. But But like I said, we weren't able to go back to the race, but we're one of the teams that are never eliminated. Hopefully they bring us back. and we have the first baby ever born on a reality TV show in Elijah Rock. And the last thing we went to in Scotland, there's this big, gigantic, like, bodybuilder guy that does those shows. He has a rock on his show. I'm like, man, that's a huge rock. And he is, I say, you always got to be built upon a rock. You know, go back to our faith and foundation. And having a baby on this race, technically in a pit stop, we named, you know, the middle name of our son, Rock. Yeah. Kind of significant to what nice. We came from, what it built, it rekindled our relationship. So it's kind of a cool thing.
So here's my one beef with Amazing Race.
Now, I got you.
Tell me if I could be completely off.
Yeah.
You have to go to like 16 places around the world or whatever, and the first one back wins, right?
Yes.
But you have to all go to the same cities at the same time. It would be so much cooler
yes.
if you could choose your own path around the world and back. You
that would
I mean?
Be unique, but then you
would
have
it be
a
possible?
Lot.
You'd have
it could be possible, but I think it would cost a lot more money for because you have security teams that you don't see.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
so
running through
you
airports
have to,
and
it's a lot of different things. You got to know where everybody's at all times. We all have like these different monitors on
like
us
packs,
that,
yeah.
in case something badly happens.
Yeah.
Because they don't want something like that on a lawsuit. Now, if I finish before you, I finish first. There's rewards. But in different parts of the race, so
you bring
say
them
you finish,
together, right?
You bring them together, yeah. but the start time for the following race could be 15, 30-minute increments.
Okay.
And
okay.
15, 30-minute increments in this race is
yeah.
huge.
Yeah.
And now you can get stuck somewhere for 6-7 hours. People don't understand, you're racing sometimes from 8 to 14 hours in one race. And you never know. And everybody thinks, well, if you just train really, really good, there's two guys on this race that – one was wrongfully accused of murder. His name was Ryan Ferguson, and he ran with a guy named Dusty. And those are two CrossFit guys that can run like the wind.
Yeah.
They finished third.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Right.
And so there's so many different mental aspects of the game, and there's so much like lifting up rocks and doing something
crazy.
Yeah,
playing
crazy.
The piano. And
playing,
yeah, bagpipes. Like bagpipes.
It's the
yeah.
most unique thing you've ever seen. Like if I'm going on Survivor, okay, I know I got to be great at making fire,
right.
and I got to be able to sustain my
find
social
food.
Game.
Yeah.
Find, you know,
yeah.
things like you kind of know what you need to be good at.
Right.
And, you know, they might have a some type of thing that's different, but you know it's always going to be something physical and something puzzle-like.
Right.
Amazing Race is so crazy. You might have to eat something crazy with, you know, scorpions crawling on
yeah.
you. I'm like, oh, man. You know, it's just tough. It really is.
Is it a lot of hotels and airports and that
tons.
Stuff?
Tons.
Yeah.
You stay at a different, you know, you go to probably 12 or 13 different airports. They did something unique. When they went back, they had a private plane because of COVID. They've
okay.
never had that. Normally,
yeah.
you're on general population, regular
yeah.
planes,
yeah.
and that becomes more difficult. So I'm hoping that they keep it going that way because
yeah.
it is very stressful, like, going
language
on. You don't get much sleep.
Yeah, yes. I bet. Yeah.
Oh, language barriers are something crazy.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And, you, like I said, you don't have a translator. And in a self-drive day, like, say I'm in Scotland, we had to drive 30 miles to somewhere. Guess what? You have to learn to read a map, doing things that you wouldn't even imagine. We all rely on this little cell phone device. You ain't got one of those. You ain't got that. It might take you 4 hours to get somewhere in 30 minutes. It's crazy.
All right, man. I appreciate it. Sam yeah. Griner here with Adam Gorney for Rivals.com.